Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode deals with serious and distressing content. Listener discretion is advised.
Dr. Michael Wong is a Melbourne surgeon who was stabbed 14 times.
He remembers every second.
His knife was coming down towards my left eye. If I pass out, I'm sure the outcome will be certain death.
This is How I Survived, stories of everyday people and how they survived against the odds. I'm your host, Beth Young.
You know, am I going to die or what?
I mean, I look back at it now and I thought, you know, how did I ever survive that?
I think that I probably survived for a reason.
How I Survived.
Peeking in on his soundly sleeping kids on a perfect summer's morning, neurosurgeon Dr. Michael Wong quietly shut the door behind him, kissed his wife goodbye, then drove to the busy public hospital outside of Melbourne, Australia, where he worked.
I parked my car outside in the car park and I got my bag and I start then walking into the foyer of the hospital. I pull my phone out and start looking for my registrar's number and start calling him to see if there is any patients on the ward that I need to see and before I go to clinic. And as I was searching for his name and pressed the dial button on my mobile phone, then I felt this strong sudden push on my back. It's almost like a punch, but it's almost like someone basically, you know, hit me really hard on the back. And my split second instinct was I thought that there were some kids mucking around and somehow just accidentally pushed me.
For a moment, everything went black. But as Michael came to his senses, glanced down and saw blood pooling at his feet, he realised with horror that he was under attack. In the middle of a busy hospital foyer, he'd been stabbed in the back with a 19-centimetre knife. Slipping in his own blood, Michael fell to the ground. Dropping his phone, the call he was making went unanswered and was captured on voicemail.
Message received at 8:32 a.m. on the 18th of February.
Then I saw this attacker then jump on top of me and start stabbing me with a knife. And that's when I sort of tried to push him away, tried to defend myself. You really don't feel any pain. And at the same time, you don't really feel fear either. You know, you have this instinctive response that you want to get away. It's almost like if you're being attacked by a wild animal. So it was on top of me and I saw his knife coming down towards my left eye. I thought, that's not such a good idea because firstly I'll be blind, secondly and the brain is actually behind the eye, so if the knife actually come through the eye, it would definitely go into my brain and I definitely will be in serious trouble or even die. The brain works in a very mysterious way and thought comes in very split microseconds, and at that moment I also thought to myself that if I had a brain injury in this hospital, I'm actually the only neurosurgeon there that morning. And that wouldn't be such a good idea either, because otherwise there's no one that can come to my aid.
So, as the attacker drove the glinting knife down towards Michael's eye, at the very last instant, he turned his head, bearing the brunt of the blade's tip on his skull.
Shortly after that, I was able to use my legs to kick him and push him back. That's when I saw someone throw a sign at him. I think also there is another person that threw a backpack at him, and that was just that split second of distraction at that instant that I felt there was a tug behind my collar, and someone then pulled me all the way into the emergency department, literally pulled me on the floor because I was full of blood. It was actually so slippery. It almost like I just slide down the corridor. I saw these really bad cuts on my hand, and then I saw, you know, my legs were bleeding, and I just thought to myself, what a mess. And I knew I'm going to need some help to have someone to put me back together. Once I was in the emergency department, then they put me on a hospital trolley, and then people start yelling. There was a lot of nurses and doctors around me. Then I just yelled to them, call my wife, and as they pushed me out of the emergency department and into the lift, and I saw my registrar on the corridor, and I still remember the horrifying look on his face.
He lost almost all his blood, but colleagues dragged him to the emergency department and he was taken straight into theatre.
As I was wheeled into the operating theatre, they then cut all my clothes away and stripped me naked so they can see all the injury.
Stabbed 14 times in the back, face, chest, hands, forearm, torso, stomach and legs, the sting as antiseptic was splashed onto Michael's open wounds was excruciating. Put to sleep, part of his lung was removed to stem bleeding, and three plastic surgeons worked to repair severed tendons in his arms and hands. He'd lost his entire supply of blood. As the sedation started to wear off, Michael woke with a breathing tube lodged in his throat.
And I remember my wife was there and she told me everything will be okay. And I remember the first time that I actually fully regained consciousness, and I saw there was a clock on the wall. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. It was all dark around me. I realized then, you know, firstly, I'm alive. I'm still here. And the first thing I do then was to move my arms and legs on both sides, because as a neurosurgeon that has an understanding of the brain, the worst fear that we always have is stroke. And as I move my arms and legs on both sides, then I realized that everything is actually working. And then the funny thing, then I thought to myself, is that, oh, great, now I don't have to be on call anymore. And it was one of those silly thoughts that, you know, now I have a legitimate reason that I have to take some holiday.
Michael certainly deserved a break, but who on earth would want him dead? Turns out, a 48-year-old man had been arrested and charged with attempted murder.
Karim Al-Salami was one of Dr. Wong's patients. He was paranoid and schizophrenic and incorrectly believed Dr. Wong had caused his chronic pain. Al-Salami sat in the foyer with a knife waiting for the surgeon before pouncing.
Thankfully for Michael, brave bystanders had put themselves in danger to save him. Courageously, a nurse had waved a bag at Al-Salami to try and keep him at bay, while a leukemia patient threw a backpack at him, only to have the knife turned on them. Then, a medical equipment technician grabbed an A-frame sign and ran into the fray screaming as Michael was dragged to safety. Without their courage, he'd have died. But Michael's proximity to medical help saved him too.
If it didn't happen at the hospital where they can immediately take me into the emergency department and take me to theatre, I would have died. I would have died simply of blood loss.
Instead, the brave dad walked out of hospital 6 days later.
I was able to walk, but my hands were in splint. I could not dress myself. I couldn't even open a doorknob by myself, and so I basically need help with everything during that first 6 weeks. At the time, my son was in primary school. He helped me, when I need to go to the bathroom, he actually helped me to undo the buttons on my pants.
When the splints came off after 6 weeks, Michael worked with a hand therapist to rebuild his strength. Miraculously, just 3 months after the attack, he had full use of his hands and was able to work as a surgeon again. While crowds scared him and he didn't like people walking behind him, Michael's real scars were physical, not emotional.
Many people have asked me after the attack, you know, I must have bad psychological scars. I must have this sort of post-traumatic stress disorder. I must have bad dreams and flashback and all that. And I look at all of them. I say, no, I don't. And I suppose we all respond to traumatic events in different ways, and we all cope in different ways. And being a busy neurosurgeon, throughout my career, I have seen really, really bad things happen to innocent, good people. It's not a lot that we can do about it, but the thing to do is to survive it well with a degree of dignity and courage, and to move on and make tomorrow a better day.
In December 2015, nearly 2 years after the attack, Karim Al-Salami appeared at Victoria's Supreme Court. The judge heard that in 2012, Dr. Michael Wong had successfully operated on Al-Salami's spine. Due to his then undiagnosed paranoid schizophrenia, he'd gradually developed delusional beliefs that the operation had gone wrong. Al-Salami had psychotic episodes and hallucinations before yelling, "Bastard, I kill you," and stabbing Dr. Wong repeatedly. 6 months on, Al-Salami was found not guilty due to his mental impairment.
Dr. Michael Wong confronted the man who tried to kill him in the hospital where he worked tirelessly to save others. Al-Salami was sentenced by a Supreme Court judge to 25 years, which he'll serve in the Thomas Embling High Security Psychiatric Hospital.
The father of two has since forgiven his attacker, even though he almost paid the ultimate price.
I'm not angry at him, so you've got to give him a bit of a break too. And I'm certain that he was not getting the help that he needed before all this happened. I wanted him to be able to receive the help that he needed.
Michael was also desperate to improve security for staff in hospitals.
Now Dr. Wong is campaigning for sweeping changes, more security guards at hospitals, separate entrances for staff, and locked wards with swipe-only access.
The thought never left my mind is that it would happen again. And if it happens again, the next victims would not be this lucky.
Sadly, he was right.
Dr. Wong was already intent on pressuring the government for tighter hospital security when another surgeon was attacked, and this time it was fatal. Dr. Patrick Pritzwald Stegman died after being punched in the head by a hospital visitor who was smoking and had been asked to put it out.
He was king hit, and he then fell to the ground and then suffered a severe brain injury and subsequently died. And when the news came to me, it really hit me very hard. He was about the same age as me, and also he had two young girls. The thought never left my mind that, you know, I could have died. Since my injury, sometimes I would sit at the dining table and look at my wife and my kids, being happy, giggling, you know, mucking around. And sometimes I just had this split thought that, you know, I could be in a parallel universe, that I actually was killed in the attack, and that, you know, I would be missing these kids, you know, would be growing up without their father. I remind myself how precious life is, how precious the people around you are, and really don't take it for granted. The fact that I survived is a miracle.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and we'll bring you more incredible stories of survival. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It really helps.
Next time...
It felt like tight, like pulling me. It was so strong that it just pulled me in the water. So I put my hand up. It was pretty gruesome, like a lot of blood. Like 10 seconds earlier, I was on the boat with two hands, and like 10 seconds after, I had one hand.
How I survived.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.